This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
David Cobb is a college basketball and college football writer at CBS Sports. He's a role player here at 92.9 ESPN as well. You can hear him Monday, Wednesday, Friday right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show at 5 o'clock and on Thursday with Jeffrey Wright and Company with Jeffrey Wright. And he's also an up-and-coming 10U soccer coach. Again, on X, David W. Cobb. David, how's it going, brother?
It's going well. No news to report relative to the soccer team. We can just kind of skip over Saturday's game if you don't want to get into that.
Okay,
it's totally
fine.
Understand if you want to skip past that one.
Yeah, it's fine. There's some things I'm actually avoiding today. I don't know if you watch the NHL playoffs. You don't have to bring it up. Don't even say it. But there's some things that Connor understands I'm avoiding today.
How into the Blues are you? How attached to the Blues are you?
Very, very.
Okay.
I'd say my Cardinals fandom's a little bit more. But right there, I lost the St. Louis Rams. That was my favorite. I would put my in order of my teams that I root on. They'd probably be at this moment third or fourth. You have Tigers.
So you count
Memphis Tigers
football and basketball as two different things.
No, that's one thing.
Okay.
Then you have the Cardinals. Then you have the Grizzlies. Then I'd say Blues right there. But playoff hockey. Very enjoyable. Oh, you don't have to.
Oh, man, I have no idea how that played. I'm so sorry.
God. I want to walk out of the studio right now. Connor, you're a sick person.
I'm so happy right now.
Why'd you do that to me?
Because it'd be funny.
It's not funny to me.
Happy birthday.
It's not a game to me, damn it. It's real. It's real to me. My God, why would you do that to me? That was disgusting. While David's trying to talk, while David's on the air with me. David, come on, can you shame him for me a little bit? That was gross.
That was pretty funny. I'm actually Team Connor on that one.
That was disgusting.
He just had it queued up and ready to go, too. That's how savage he is.
All right, let me change the subject very quickly. Quick, fast, and in a hurry. It's kind of funny because I saw you guys at CBS Sports. You got this quote out of Kurt Cignetti last month, but it's really coming to a head right now with all the NIL discussions and everybody else. But he did call out a bunch of programs, and everybody is sort of getting they're a little late to the conversation, but they're getting around to it. He called out a bunch of programs, didn't he? I mean, he went after Oregon, Ohio State, Texas Tech, Texas. Miami, he said they all are going to have $40 million rosters. I want to ask you this from your conversations. Is that number correct? And also, I do want to know what you think about Kurt Cignetti as a coach. Is he becoming a little insufferable? I know he was really good year one at Indiana, but he has done this time and time again.
Well, if you keep winning, you can keep talking. He won a lot in year one. He also had a really favorable schedule in year one. I don't know that year two schedule for Indiana is going to be quite as favorable for them. I don't mind it. I think it's great the fact that he's willing to call it what it is in college football. I thought you were going to bring up something he had said about tampering, and in which case, dude, miss me with all that. But I think it's actually really important for coaches like Kurt Cignetti, who are at the have-not programs, to sort of point out and continually remind specifically their fan bases, hey, look, there's a massive difference between the type of player we can get and the type of player these other schools can get. And he probably, he realizes that, hey, you know what? I'm not going to win 10 games this year. I might not ever win 10 games again at Indiana, and I need people to know why. It's not because I'm a bad coach. It's because Michigan is spending 30-something million dollars on their roster. Ohio State, same deal. Penn State, same deal. So that's what he's doing here. He's just sort of trying to remind everybody, you know what, like, I'm going to do my best here, but we operate in a totally different world. Oh, yeah, by the way, have you seen how much NIL my basketball coach is getting right now? Because it's probably right. about as much as I'm getting, you know? I mean, I don't know that he's come out and out said that about the basketball program, but we know what's most important at Indiana. So I think that's what Kurt Cinetti is doing. He's just trying to remind everybody, hey, I might have gotten out over my skis in year one with that success, and don't expect it to last.
You know, I view what he did. I agree with you. Some people will call it snitching. Some people will say it's sour grapes. I view it as self-care, and I saw it, and the reason I say that, I saw Mark Stoops do this a couple years ago when they lost to Georgia. He's like, okay, if you want us to beat Georgia, if you're tired of us getting our ass kicked by Georgia, you know what you have to do? Go to the Kentucky Collective and donate money. I think it's a little bit of self-care, trying to keep a realistic understanding of where your program is at and the expectations you should have considering the type of competition you're going against. I view it through not necessarily a positive lens, but a realistic lens.
Well, it's like guys like Cignetti and every ball coach out there, you know, they believe they're good enough to go out and go toe-to-toe with anyone in the game, schematically, whatever it is. But then you get to this level and you realize there's so much more to it than that. Because when you're the coach at James Madison or you're a coach at the FCS level, I mean, it more or less is a level playing field. Sure, your Montana States and your Idaho States probably devote more resources to it than you know, some of your other programs out there. Like, you know, there's always been imbalances in certain respects in college sports, but now it's like, it's really, really magnified in this era. I mean, it's for crying out loud. It's the Tampa Bay Rays versus the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's, you know, in terms of payroll, it's the Arizona Diamondbacks versus the New York Yankees, right? Like, that's what we're seeing now, because obviously I'm using Major League Baseball because they don't have a salary cap. It's the same deal in college football. There's not a salary cap. People say, oh, the house revenue share caps you at 20.5. Well, no, that caps the amount of revenue sharing that you can spend, but there is no cap on the amount of NIL earnings, at least right now. That's why there's this whole big thing about if they're going to be able to regulate what is true NIL. That's the huge piece in all this, because if they're going to try to regulate what is true NIL, then maybe there is a closer to a level playing field. But Gabe, you and I both know that's going to be virtually impossible to do. If they try to do that, all this money that we're talking about right now, it's just going to go right back under the table.
Right.
It's just going to be like 2003 all over again, where we pretend like the star players aren't getting paid under the table.
Yeah, and this brings me to the conversation I wanted to be sort of on the forefront with us today. You know, Donald Trump and Nick Saban in Tuscaloosa, you know, he did the commencement speech and all that stuff, and you have Nick Saban and him getting together on NIL legislation, and the idea that they said behind the NIL legislation they want to introduce is going to be increased scrutiny on NIL. Now, Steve Berman, who is one of the leaders in the House settlement, said Coach Saban and Trump's 11th-hour talks of executive orders and other meddling are just more unneeded self-involvement. College athletes are spearheading historic changes and benefiting massively from NIL deals. They don't need this unmerited interference from a coach only seeking to protect the system that made him tens of millions of dollars. I will say this, and I know this is lame. Everybody wants you to pick a side in sports talk radio. I can play both sides of this. I really can. I understand where Steve Berman's coming from. Nick Saban stepping in at the last minute, trying to work with President Trump for executive orders to try to put some guardrails around NIL, sort of interrupts what he's doing. But I agree with both sides of this. I think what the House settlement's trying to accomplish is fair, but I also do believe we need more scrutiny and understanding of what's going on with NIL.
Yeah, I don't know that the executive order idea gets us really any closer to that, because, I mean, ultimately what it comes down to is the whole reason why we've been trying to get the government involved in this, right? Because, I mean, nobody really believes that the government is, like, well-equipped to solve college football's problems.
Right.
But Congress does have the authority to issue, make laws, whatever, antitrust exemptions, which is ultimately what you're going to need to put a cap on an industry in terms of what they can pay. Because it would be, you're just going to continue to get sued if you try to put in rules, if you're the NCAA, saying, okay, the athletes can only make this much, and athletes in these sports can only make this much, right? Like, outside of a collective bargaining agreement, you have to have antitrust. And so that's why you're getting the government involved. But an executive order doesn't accomplish that. So, I mean, it's I don't know. I mean, I guess it kind of it gets Trump out there a little bit in the college sports space and, you know, whatever. It kind of gives Saban the appearance of influence and whatnot. But I don't know that it really accomplishes anything other than just more grandstanding and just more bluster out there, which, at this point, this House settlement, as you mentioned, 11th hour, it's so close to going through. Let's see what that judge approves, and then let's see what we need done from there, rather than trying to tack on and alter the landscape right before the whole settlement goes through.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely more grandstanding from Donald Trump, no doubt. He likes to bring up, whether it be on social media accounts or in speeches, what everybody's talking about, like what he did with Shedeur Sanders during the NFL draft. I mean, this is definitely to help him in his popularity. I don't doubt that in the slightest. But we've talked about this in the past. The House settlement's not perfect either, and we're finding that along the way. Claudia Wilkin, the judge who's overseeing it, doesn't think it's perfect by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it's flawed. I mean, they're still working on things right now about the roster spots, and are they going to grandfather in the players who are already on the rosters? Because, I mean, let's face it, there's thousands of college athletes around the country right now whose very spots on their teams are in jeopardy as a result of what could be coming with this settlement. And so that's the big hang up right now. So you got that, and then the biggest thing with the House settlement is the potential establishment of this clearinghouse that would vet NIL deals to figure out if they are, quote, real NIL. And if they're not real NIL, they're capped at a very small amount, if that part of the settlement is able to stand legally, then you do have the framework for, quote, guardrails and getting this under control. But it to me, it all goes back to the money then going back under the table. And so that's where, yeah, I just don't know. I just don't know that you can ever please. But you know what? Maybe that's okay. Like, Gabe, maybe that's okay, because it was fine. It was fine until NIL, right? Like, we knew some guys were getting money under the table. We knew guys weren't going to play basketball at Duke or football at Alabama for free. But, like, we didn't really see how the sausage was made. Nobody really cared. As long as you didn't leave a paper trail, you could usually get away with it. Maybe that's okay. Like, maybe this House settlement can establish the $20.5 million annual in revenue share, at least get us something that's legal. And then whatever else comes under the table outside of that clearinghouse, whatever, like, who cares? At the end of the day, at least the athletes will be legally making some of the money now, which I think is where we're
going. And then they'll illegally make the pay for play from collectives, basically.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, maybe that's a good outcome. Maybe that's a good outcome.
And honestly, you could find ways to even do it legally. You have to do some type of advertisement, use your name, image, and likeness, but there are easy ways to make them use their name, image, and likeness that don't have to do with ads. So I don't know if it has the framework to really stop them from doing the collective thing that they're doing right now, which is not name, image, and likeness. We all know that.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. Yeah, I mean, if you can at least, I'm going to do 5 autograph sessions, and then, I guess.
Sign, not even 5 autograph sessions. Sign 5 autographs and give them $1 million. They could find a way to rationalize that.
$200,000 for autograph. That's pretty solid. I would take that.
Yeah, absolutely. Good work if you can get it. Great work if you can get it. All right, now Tiger basketball got another commitment over the weekend. UT Rio Grande Valley 6'8" wing Hassan Abdul Hakim, 13 points per game, 7 rebounds, 1.4 steals, 6'8", shot 35% from 3 a couple years ago, 33%. He only played in 12 games. Hasn't played a lot of college D1 college basketball, but he has one more year of eligibility. I actually had the pleasure of watching him against Creighton early in the year. And in that game, it was very close. It was 99-86, really high-scoring game. Ryan Kalkbrenner for Creighton had 50 points. But I watched this kid, 26 points, 11 rebounds. against Creighton. This is, you know, I don't know how good he will be in a full season because we've yet to see that even at UT Rio Grande Valley. But it feels like there's some upside, more upside than a lot of the moves they've made this offseason. Even this kid, he's got some juice.
Interestingly enough, he was one that I watched a good bit of tape on early because he was one of the first guys of any significance in the portal before it just went haywire. And so I was able at that time to sort of research guys, watch some stuff on synergy on players. And he was one of the very first ones who I did. And one of the things that stuck out to me that it makes it a bit of a curious fit. I mean, I'm with you. Like, there is upside here. A 6'8 guy who can handle the ball, shoot it a little bit. Like, there's a lot to like. But, man, he was really a primary ball handler for UT Rio Grande Valley at 6'8". Handle the ball as the ball handler in the pick and roll quite a bit at that size, which is not something you see a lot, which is, as you say, I mean, it is intriguing. But then you also realize, I mean, hey, we got Doug McDaniel here. We got Sincere Parker here.
Dante Harris.
A lot of guys who like yes, Dante Harris. I mean, is the door completely shut on Haggerty at this point? Whatever. Like, so there's a lot of guys who like to have the ball in their hands. I think Hakeem could play off the ball a little bit at a place like Memphis because, you know, he does show some potential as a shooter, but that's just not how he was utilized at his last stop. So I am just curious about that, but I'm with you. Like, he doesn't seem like super quick or super agile, but he's got like almost like a little bit of a feel for the game, a little bit of a pace to him that almost reminds me of like a European type of player, the way he's able to sort of control the game with the ball in his hands.
Yeah, I will say this, though. There is some athleticism and length to his game that maybe could give you some optionality off the bench as like a three or a small ball four type guy. But the one thing that still is not fully figured out because we're waiting on a Dane Danger waiver, they got to find another pick, man. They do. Aaron Bradshaw at 7'1", and then your next tallest player being 6'8". They're going to have to figure that out if they want to really compete against the best of the best in the front court.
Well, even if Danger comes back and gets that eligibility waiver cleared, I still, even with Danger and Bradshaw, I still think you need another big just for insurance's sake and just to have a body in practice and just in case somebody gets hurt. So, I mean, really, I look at Danger and then another big. And so, you know, maybe if you get Abdul, you know, you play Abdul Hakeem at the four a little bit, maybe Danger's waiver doesn't get approved. Like, maybe you can get by with just adding one more big. But, I mean, there's a world in which they need to add two more bigs even at this point with dwindling numbers of scholarships. Because at this point, I mean, they look pretty set to me on the perimeter. And so, yeah, Abdul Hakeem's interesting because he can play on the perimeter, kind of be a small ball four, whatever. So, yeah, I think it's a good pickup. I'm fascinated to see sort of how or what they're envisioning for his role. I guess that's what I would say.
Yeah. Now another transfer portal thing. Jaden Rashada, former 5-star quarterback. He's been at Georgia. He's been at Arizona State. He has officially made his commitment, and I think he's going to sign with Sacramento State, moving into D1 this year. How do you view this move? How do you view this move for Jaden Rashada?
It's kind of sad.
Okay.
It's kind of sad that a guy who was once regarded as like a potential college football star has now been reduced to trying to make a way for himself at a, you know, what is an FCS program at this point. And that's unfortunate. But shout out to my guy, Cameron Salerno, who, to my knowledge, is the first writer to get like a one-on-one with Jaden Rashada about, you know, everything he's been through over the last couple of years. And, you know, I know he didn't want to get into the lawsuit with Florida, and I totally get that. But man, it's just another one of those cases kind of like Nico, where it's just like NIL, as great as it is, has like led to some really, really poor outcomes for players on the field. And that's kind of how I feel about Jaden Rashada. And oh yeah, by the way, Sac State, I'm pretty sure, is getting Mikey Williams too.
Yes.
Yeah, so and Shaquille O'Neal's son. So
yeah.
Boy, I mean, if there's not a Netflix
and Shaquille O'Neal, by the way, so
yeah, as their GM, right? Like, surely there's going to be a documentary there. There's got to be, right?
You would think, but I don't know, because Sacramento State. I know they're an FCS program moving to FBS. They seem to be investing heavily. So
from what I understand
about their NIL department, they have a lot of money that they're willing to use. So I wonder how much Jaden Rashad is actually getting. I don't view this through the same lens as Malachi Nelson to UTEP, if you will.
Yeah.
I view this through a different lens of, okay, yeah, it's a fall from grace, but Sacramento State right now, I know most people don't pay attention to these things. Sacramento State right now is not a bad landing spot in the grand scheme of things. It really is.
They're throwing their money around trying to get to that. I mean, at one point they were trying to get into the Pac-12. They're serious about it, about being leveling up in athletics. Like there's no doubt about that. But I mean, come on, this guy, 3 years ago, the 2025 season was penciled in as like the one where he might be a Heisman Trophy contender or the starting quarterback for a top 10 team or whatever. And now it's like, we still haven't seen you play football and now you're going to be at Sac State. So like, I hope though the settlement with Florida like works out for him and he gets what he was legally owed there and stuff. But I mean, come on, the guy's football career has gone down the tubes.
Yeah. Okay. I can respect that. We'll see though. We'll see. Brendan Marion, yeah, go offense, maybe put up some numbers.
I think that's part of it too. I think Brendan Marion is a guy with like some pretty serious recruiting clout, like in an era where it's mostly about the money. Like he's one of the few difference makers out there who I feel like is still capable of landing and getting big name players because, this is somebody that like people want to play for. He's got good schemes and is, he's a guy with whose name people recognize. So, I mean, from that standpoint, he deserves a lot of credit for this.
Yeah, for sure. Well, David, I'll let you roll, man. We'll talk again on Wednesday.
Okay, sounds good.
Yes, sir. He is David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports. And he's brought to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday by Oxbow, the family-owned and operated retail store that's been making waves in Memphis for over a decade. They're loaded up for the summer with fresh gear for guys who don't sit still. First up, we have Poncho, their best-selling fishing apparel line, built for the wild and made for those who chase adventure. Get by, get some Poncho. You can also mark your calendars for May 23rd and May 24th. They're teaming up with Milwaukee Boot Company for a two-day event celebrating rugged craftsmanship and boots that don't quit. Then another event on May 29th and May 30th. You can go find them at 964 June Road, and their site is shopoxbow.com. But May 29th and 30th, come by their Mizzen and Main trunk show, featuring giveaways and warm weather staples built for comfort and style. Don't miss their newest arrival, Wolf and Shepherd, where athletic performance meets dress shoe polish. Yes, this is these shoes. Rob Gronkowski, Gronk, wears them. They're sleek, sharp, and comfortable enough to run a 40-yard dash in. They have sizes up to 15 at Oxbow. Plus, just in time for the Laker Beach, check out the latest drops from Yeti. Go get your cooler. And when you buy a cooler at Oxbow, all you have to do is prove that you bought it there, and they give you free ice for life from their ice machine. Don't have to go to the gas station and pay for ice. Just bring that Yeti cooler up to Oxbow at 964 June Road, and they will give you free ice. Oxbow, anchored in Memphis. Go to 964 June Road to find them in person and online at shopoxbow.com. That's shopoxbeau.com. Now, we need to have a little bit of a conversation about retired numbers and Abdul Carter, the number three pick in this year's NFL draft. He went to the New York Giants, and he has asked a couple of Giants greats to don their number. We'll talk about it on the other side. The number three overall pick in the 2025 NFL draft was Penn State defensive end, edge defender, Abdul Carter. And he's coming into a league with a Giants team that's trying to get up off the mat, that has another defensive end in Brian Burns, who's very good, and then you have Kayvon Thibodeau. They have some things that there is to like about the upside for Abdul Carter. Now, Abdul Carter wore number 11 at Penn State, and it was an ode to LeVar Arrington, who started the trend. LeVar Arrington wore it.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
I'm Emma Grede, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grede, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grede, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Like a Parsons ward, every really good defender dons the number 11. It's not a retired jersey. But as Abdul Carter has been drafted at number 3 overall and is going to play defensive end for the Giants, he wanted to find a number. His first two have been vehemently denied by the previous owners of those jerseys. He wanted 56 at first. If you know anything about number 56, Lawrence Taylor, one of the best defenders of all time, wore that number for the New York Giants, and it is retired. So Abdul Carter requested it. Lawrence Taylor said, "No, young man, you cannot have number 56. That is my number. I won 2 Super Bowls. I went to 10 all. I was on 10 All Pro teams. I went to 10 Pro Bowls. It's one of the best defenders of all time. You know, you're gonna have to find something else." Then, like he did in college, he tried to go after number 11, which is another retired jersey for the New York Giants, and that was Phil Simms' number, who won 2 Super Bowls, and he went to 2 Pro Bowls in that number, but that number is retired as well. That one's a little different. Phil Simms said he would be honored for Abdul Carter to wear that number, but Phil Simms' family then outvoted Phil Simms himself, and Abdul Carter will not be wearing that number. So he, on his third try, he's going to have to find another number. And here's what I'll say. Pick one that's not retired, brother. Pick one that's not retired. It's that simple. You don't have to mimic the past to try to make a name for yourself. You should, in my opinion, as a young player, want to carve out your own role, carve out your own legacy with a different number. You don't have to go after Lawrence Taylor's. You don't have to go after Phil Simms. And I think what's frustrating about this for me is those guys, Hall of Fame level, Hall of Fame caliber, won 2 Super Bowls with that franchise. That franchise has not been the same since. It just feels like a lack of self-awareness from Abdul Carter, as a guy who's accomplished nothing in the National Football League, to ask for those numbers to be unretired simply for him. They've had other first-round picks. Mm-hmm. They've had other top 3 draft picks. They have brought in numerous guys through the NFL draft, and they have not made a fuss about this. They have not tried to go after the legendary numbers. I just think it is just a severe lack of awareness, self-awareness, from Abdul Carter to go after some of the legendary numbers, the retired numbers in New York Giants lore.
The third number he's going to ask for is number 10.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's just, right. It's, I don't like it when people get put in a position to where they kind of have to say no. Like, of course they're going to say no. Why would they say yes? Abdul Carter, it's, you were an amazing college football player. You've done nothing in the NFL. Why would 2 Giants legends who have won Super Bowls give you their number just because you want it? You've got to earn that number, but just make your own legacy. Make your own legacy with your own number.
You should want to, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is. I think it's just, it's a silly thing to ask. I don't think he should have asked. It puts them in a weird position to where, nobody likes saying no. And some people will take it as, oh, well, these old guys are saying no, so they're the bad guys in the situation. It's like, no. The rookie who's asking these all-time Giants legends for
their
numbers.
The guy who's accomplished nothing in the National Football League is asking for
it. It's silly. I mean, I don't know if you saw, but like Rob Gronkowski went on this huge rant about it.
Most NFL players have gone after
him. It's like, first off, it's Lawrence freaking Taylor, and you're asking for his number? What are you doing?
And maybe it's him with the Penn State tie-in and the LeVar Arrington lore and like how all that went with Micah Parsons handing down number 11. Maybe it's just stuck in his head. But you have to get into a different space. You ain't at Penn State anymore.
No.
You've learned that very quickly.
And it's Lawrence freaking Taylor.
Yes. And what I do like about Lawrence Taylor, though, straight up no.
Yeah.
Like, Phil Simms, like, I'd be honored. He's trying to be, like, the politician in this whole
Phil
thing.
Phil Simms, he was smart, because he knew that his family was going to outvote him. So he was like, oh, well, I'd be honored, but I guess I can't do it because my family outvoted me. It's like, uh-huh.
I just want these guys coming into the NFL to understand, accomplish something. Then maybe you can ask about these things. Maybe you can talk a Lawrence Taylor or a Phil Simms into doing, even though I think that's unlikely. But to have accomplished nothing, to be joining a team where you have a coach and a GM on the hot seat, to just have never played a snap of Giants football, to not even know what it's about yet, to ask for those legendary numbers, to mimic those legendary numbers, I find it just strange. It's lacking self-awareness, and it's just a strange feeling of entitlement, in my opinion, but we'll see how it all plays out for him. He can find a number that's unused and not retired, well, and he should have done that from the beginning.
And his tweet about it is super weird, too, where he said, damn, at this point, I'm going to be out there with just my last name on my jersey, no number. Just find another number that isn't a legend with the New York Giants and that isn't retired.
You know what you should do, Abdul?
Find it's that. Go to a
Carter?
Dartboard and throw a dart, and you'll
this?
Probably hit
Abdul
one.
Abdul Carter, find Abdul Carter's number. Don't find Lawrence Taylor's number. Don't find Phil Simms' number. Go find a number that you can make an impression with. Maybe you can be a retired number at some point, but it's just, it was very weird to see him go that direction. I don't really have a precedent for this. I haven't seen a whole lot of players coming out of college doing this because it's just not self-aware to try to put yourself into a retired number. There are very few numbers that are off the table with the New York Giants. And you think that you have the ability and the right to ask for those where people in the past have not? Just, it's chew on that for a second. Just,
well,
strange.
I also just think it's a terrible way to really introduce yourself,
yes,
to two guys within the Giants organization that mean a lot. Like, the first, it sounds like one of his first, and I don't know if it's his first one, but one of his first interactions with, again, Lawrence freaking Taylor is, hey, man, can I have your jersey number? And he's like,
no.
Who are you?
Like, no.
What?
You can't, though. You
no.
cannot have it.
It's just a lack of self-awareness.
Yeah,
it's just insane.
I think the really where the lack of self-awareness comes in is like these guys worked their ass off to make those numbers mean something. They have done so much for that organization to make those numbers retire.
Yeah. Hey, man, let's play a second of NFL football.
Before we start making asks like
this. I can't wait to watch it, but I've seen an eight minute Mike Francesa video going around. I bet he just loses his mind.
Yes.
I cannot wait to watch it.
I saw Kyle Brandt put this out there. I agree with this. This is a fair one. First of all, maybe a double zero or a zero. That would be fun.
That would be actually
fun. How about
fun.
This? 56 was Lawrence Taylor. 11 was Phil Simms.
56 minus 11?
Let's just go. You can do 56 minus 11 if you want. You can land on 45 if you want, I guess. But let's just go 51. Let's sort of split the difference.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, let's just split the difference.
Let me make sure it's not retired by the Giants.
Kyle Brandt said it's an open number, and it is not retired. No one on the roster currently has it. 51. There you go. That's Abdul Carter's number from now on. And maybe you can get it retired one day. And when somebody asks you, maybe you can handle it differently and let them have it. But hopefully you're one of the guys that understands that the work that you have done to get that jersey retired is not done easily. You don't just hand that to somebody when they come into the
What did he think they were going to say?
Well,
did he really think that they were going to be like, yeah, man, you could have this jersey that got retired?
I don't know, man. I don't know. You just don't see this every day. Very, very weird from Abdul Carter. We do have a little bit of breaking news out of the NBA. The NBA Coach of the Year voting results are through, and it looks like Ime Udoka was third. He got 113 points. J.B. Bickerstaff from Detroit got 31 first-place votes. He had 305 total points, but the winner of the NBA Head Coach of the Year, Kenny Atkinson from the Cleveland Cavaliers, he had 401 total points, 59 first place votes. Fully deserved. Fully deserved.
Definitely deserved.
No notes.
For JB, though. That's
yeah,
awesome.
JB awesome. Was really close. But when you just look at Kenny Atkinson and what he did to change the fortunes and the outlook and the conversation around the Cavs, that's damn important to me.
Right.
That's really important to me. Because last offseason, we were talking about Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. Can they exist at the same time? Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell, can they exist at the same time? They were thinking about blowing it up. Instead, they fired a head coach, brought in Kenny Atkinson, and he brought a certain level of stability to that franchise that was thinking about blowing it all up and starting anew and retooling last offseason.
Yeah.
That's impressive work. They won 64 games, beat out the Celtics in the Eastern Conference for the number one seed. I know they're down 1-0 right now, but the injuries are sort of mounting for them. But Kenny Atkinson absolutely deserves that, especially after the sort of anticlimactic way it ended for him in Brooklyn. Let's not forget that. That was just a Kevin Durant, Kyrie, we don't really want him to be our head coach move. It had nothing to do with really on the court results, because he got decent results with a team that was not Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving was not really in a winning situation. Shouldn't have been an 8 seed in the Eastern Conference.
Right. And he has one of the best all-time like videos now of a coach asking for that review.
Yeah. Great. For sure. For sure.
Definitely deserved.
All right, now let's go ahead and take our final break of hour number 2 and get to small talk when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. And small talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. LeBron James, even though his season ended not too long ago, is ruled out tonight. What is he ruled out tonight for? The Met Gala in New York. This is what he put out earlier on his social media account. Unfortunately, because of my knee injury I sustained at the end of the season, I won't be able to attend the Met Gala in New York tonight, as so many people have been asking and congratulating me on. Hate to miss an historical event. My beautiful, powerful queen will be there holding down the castle, as she always has done. He ruled himself out because of a knee injury for the Met Gala. I'm
starting
confused.
A tweet that way when you are a 40-year-old LeBron James.
It's weird.
Struck the fear of God into me as a LeBron fan.
First you thought sentence, he was retiring?
I don't know what the hell he was about to say, but unfortunately, because of my knee injury, I was like, oh my God. I had to like freeze, put my phone down, walk away, come back, read it again, and I was like, oh my God, it's the Met Gala. He doesn't do it on purpose, but he is so funny. The way he operates is insane. The book reading, the obvious lies he tells, the opting out of the Met Gala, as if...
Because the knee injury is going to affect you.
Was he supposed to dunk at the Met Gala?
They were going to put up a standalone hoop at the end of the carpet so he could go dunk.
Like, what are we...
I don't get it. You can walk, put a brace on your knee or something, and you can walk on the damn grade 2
just
MCL sprain.
Just incredible. Incredible stuff. But it really did. It scared the hell out of me when I first read that. The first sentence, I was like, what is about to happen right now? And then it was Met Gala, and I was like, what?
Like, ruled out of the Met Gala, knee injury, in parentheses.
Well, it was one of those where I read it, and then I was like, is this a parody account?
No. Nope. That's him.
It is LeBron James. At King James on Twitter.
Yes. I didn't really. I just, okay. All right. That's something. You could probably still get your way there, make your way there. But he is serious about his rehab and recovery. He wouldn't have made it 23 years.
Right.
He wouldn't have made it to age 40 if he didn't. All right, now we talked about stupid trade ideas for John Morant because everybody is still trying to get him, at least in the national media, out of the city of Memphis. But today, Bleacher Report came up with a trade idea with the Miami Heat. So the Miami Heat would acquire John Morant. Do you want to hear this, Connor? Am I going to throw? You're going to hear it anyway. But do you want to even hear this? Because this is my first thought. When I saw this on Bleacher Report, I was like, even before I read like the idea of the trade, I was thinking, do the Heat have anything the Grizzlies want?
No.
They don't. Maybe picks, but the Grizzlies have
picks. They have one thing, and his name's Eric Spoelstra.
Yeah, but like I was just sitting there, I'm like, what do the Heat have? So how could you even do this trade? And then I read it, and I go, okay, yeah, this is pretty damn ridiculous. This is the idea that Bleacher Report put out there for a Ja Morant Miami Heat trade. Ja Morant and Jae Huff for Duncan Robinson, Nikola Jovic, Jaime Jaquez, Kyle Anderson, 3 first-round picks. Why would the Grizzlies do that?
Why in the hell would they do that?
Why would they do that?
Why in the hell would they do that?
You're not getting a premier piece.
Nope.
You're not replacing point guard.
Nope.
You're not getting anyone who's any more than a bench player, in a middle of the line bench player at that.
I think like two of those guys DMP'd did not play during the
Jaime Jaquez and Kyle Anderson.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
No.
Why would they do
that? Only thing that's interesting about that is the picks, and still no.
And they when it comes to picks, the Grizzlies have no reason to take in picks right now.
Correct.
Zero reason. And also, if we're being honest with ourselves about Zach Kleiman, the GM, Zach Kleiman is fine. He's made some good decisions. He's made some bad decisions. Mostly his trade stuff and the Marcus Smart deal that fell through. That's the nasty part of it. But he's not overly great with first-round draft picks. And this team doesn't need to get younger. And you're not thinking about blowing up the big three yet. They won 48 games last year. They need to get better around the edges. You can't get better around the edges by trading Ja Morant. Like, I'm just amazed, man. And it seems like even with the Orlando Magic thing from Ashley Nicole Moss last week, we talked about it on Friday with CBS Sports. That's where she did it. It's like they just want Ja to be out of Memphis so bad that they're doing these nonsensical trade ideas.
Nonsense.
That will hurt the Grizzlies long term and help somebody else. And it's like, why would they even come close to picking up the phone if the Heat called them? There's nothing that the Heat have that the Grizzlies would want.
There is literally not a single player on the Heat I would trade Ja Morant for. Yes. Not one. I wouldn't even think about it.
I mean, you could trade for some of these guys. I don't know. You could trade for some of these guys, but you're not trading one of the big three to go get a Kyle Anderson, Jaime Jaquez, Nikola Jovic, Duncan Robinson.
That's genuinely one of the worst trades I've ever heard. Who's coming up with these?
Let's see. Who did come up with this? Can't see right now. But it was Bleacher Report ultimately.
Well, step in my office. You're effing fired.
Who put the article up?
Terrible.
It feels like most of these publications, it's like the bosses hit their NBA analyst and writer up and say, you have to do a Ja Morant trade. And there's no real package out there or trade that makes sense at this moment.
There are much better fake ones you could come up with.
Yeah.
All of them are going to be nonsense, but that one is one of the worst I've ever heard.
One of my biggest pet peeves, though, is national NBA writers just wanting a star
out of a small market.
Out of a small market, yeah. Just to get the star out of a small market.
Yeah.
It's so annoying. Why can't small markets have good things, in your guys' opinion? Like, what is wrong with the Memphis Grizzlies having a star like Ja Morant? There's nothing wrong with it. He's still thriving. He's still one of the young faces of the NBA. He doesn't have to be in Miami to help facilitate that. He doesn't have to be in L.A. to help facilitate that. It's one of my biggest pet peeves always with really all American sports. You always want these big names out of small markets.
Can I also ask like an honest question? If they're trading those guys, I guess they got Tyler Hero down there. So it'd be Ja, Hero, and Bam, and Andrew Wiggins. Is that much
weird.
Better than what the Grizzlies are now?
Isn't that a weird fit, dude?
Bam Adebayo and Andrew Wiggins would have to hold that defense on their backs. Could you imagine?
Oh my God, Tyler Hero.
Front line of your defense is Ja and Tyler Hero? Holy crap.
Oh, my God.
Brother, we could score 20.
Maybe. It's possible. It is possible.
Woo!
Mostly because
of Tyler Hero.
As long as we could handle the ball well enough without getting it stolen, I think we'd be okay.
Good point.
Yeah, hour number three is on the way, and we are going to go ahead and open it with Jason Smith. I want to catch up with him on the coaching hiring that the Grizzlies made last Friday. Tomas Isolo is now the head coach for the future of this Memphis Grizzlies franchise. Let's get Jason's opinion on the other side.